It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 23rd day of September 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. It's also where we tuck away the Merry Madcap wacky real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. If you'd like to wander on by here midweek, well, you'll be greeted by early arriver Squeaky and, of course, capably moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Yeah, because, third stage guild navigators take Wednesdays off, like doctors. Hi, I'm Bob, and it is indeed midweek, hump day, downhill to Friday, and yes, of course, prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. But every program here begins with gratitude, so let's do that first and extend thanks to our 23rd day of the month subscribers. Thanks very kindly to Stacy and to Philip and to Reggie and to those are our 23rd day of the month subscribers, and thanks to all of our subscribers, both Patreon and PayPal. You're a big part of the reason why this program continues to exist. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks for a new subscription over at Patreon. Thank you very kindly to Uncle Smokey. Thanks very much indeed. And a reminder, we're in fundraising free radio for the next week or so. And that means, no pitches. And I like that. It may not matter to anybody else, but me getting a break from it is humongous. That having been said, there is an offer that remains on the table. And I will mention that through the end of the month, because that's when the offer ends. We've got nine $10 a month slots remaining, courtesy of an offer by one of our oldest and longest standing subscribers, being Tony and Chico. Tony will double your first month subscription up to $90. Nine at 10, 10 at 9, two at 45, like that. But that's out there. If we can get some new subscribers, that would be wonderful. Let's see here. Let's check in on before we jump into the prayer meeting Wednesday part of the program. Kyle in Kentucky Stan, writing, Bob, the American government is intentionally throwing injustice in our face now. The American, and that's with three K's, government is a terrorist organization, and America with three K's is the bad guy. Yeah, I understand, and we'll get it. The announcement of, I better not even mention it, or else I'll be off and running. And then this, of course, Bob. About 244 years ago today, Nathan Hale was hanged, not hung, giraffe-y, hanged by the British Army for being a spy for the Continental Army and the 13 colonies during the American Revolution. He'd volunteered in an intelligence-gathering mission not far from Lee in New York's house in Lower Manhattan when the British captured and executed him. He's long been considered an American hero. And in 1985, he was officially designated the State Hero of Connecticut, with his statue placed right on Darlene in Connecticut's front lawn. Hale was a brilliant man, just like our own Bob Kincaid. Well, gosh, thanks, from the Head On Radio Network. As Hale went to Yale when he was just 14 years old, that was a thing that happened back then. When you'd had as much schooling as you could have, at about 13, 14 years old, they shipped you off to college. That was before there were anything like high schools. You can argue that back then, Yale, Princeton, were high schools. But he went to Yale when he was just 14 years old, Nathan Hale did. Graduated first in his class after studying astronomy, mathematics, and literature. A brilliant young lad, but not as brilliant as Bob, because he never had an online radio talk program like Bob has. Yeah, okay. That's good. Even though Nathan Hale was a brilliant patriot espionage agent, Trump would not have liked him because he got captured. Just wait till after the election, Trump, you asshole, because I think some people in New York City are about to capture you, you tax fraud freak. Of course, Nathan Hale's most famous line when he was captured was, "Fuck Trump!" No, actually, Hale stated, "I only regret that I have one life to lose for my country." A very noble and brave man indeed was Nathan Hale. A couple of nights ago, down in southwest Ohio, Trump spoke to a bunch of non-mask-wearing maggots, all of whom were not social distancing either. Before Trump came to the podium to speak, Lieutenant Governor Husted encouraged the faithful Moran maggots to wear their masks, and I've seen video, perhaps you have too, there's audio, video and audio, and all the mask-hole COVIDiot maggots booed and hissed at the Lieutenant Governor for suggesting that they should wear masks. The maggots should not have been booing Husted for requesting them to wear masks, but the boos should have been for the Lieutenant Governor's endless attempts to kick fellow Ohio voters off their voting rolls and violating their civil and constitutional rights. Then the merry band of maggots booed the governor himself. Yes, Mike DeWine was booed for virtually the same thing. Instead, what he should have been booed for, and yes, he should have been booed for raising gasoline taxes, dialing back women's rights, and not enforcing churches to stop congregating during the pandemic. But the stupid maggots just booed like DeWiney little babies they were. Ah, DeWiney little babies. And are, because they were asked to wear masks. What's that, giraffery? Giraffery states with eloquence on this prayer meeting Wednesday, "I pray that these non-mask-wearing maggots come to realize that they, too, have only one life to lose, and come to a philosophical resolve that one's life is not worth losing to a maggot rally for a devious, derelict dictator such as Nitwit Nerona." Well said, Giraffe. Always staying above the fray, Giraffe is. Comes easy when you're a giraffe. This has been Joey's Journal for Prayer Meeting Wednesday, the 23rd of September, with Giraffe hanging on for dear life. I understand. I understand. And this from Rico in DeBerg. Listening to your Tuesday program, beautiful, inspiring rendition of your gamble through the woods of West Virginia. I appreciate that you seem to have seasonal affective disorder. Didn't mean to criticize you for that. I understand. It's okay. No worries. Anyway, I'm going to do my subscription again. Not sure if it'll count toward Tony's thing. I don't care. Love you a lot, brother. Rico, in the life we share. Thank you, Rico. That's warm and kind and much appreciated. And today, I got up and found out that, well, maybe I overdid it a little bit yesterday. Because I was right sore and stiff, so instead of going out and doing another couple of miles, I gave myself a breather today. And instead just did a lot of stretching to make sure that all those muscles that got worked yesterday didn't just contract and compact into miserable little achy knots. So there's that. And it told on me. I felt like I had missed out on something. But I haven't missed out on any cigarettes. Well, I have missed out on cigarettes. I'm still quit. Today was a little weird because we're over that one-week hump and downhill to 2 weeks. And Kelly had warned me that at the 14-day mark, it can get a little dicey. So I'm trying to be mindful and super conscious of all of that kind of thing. And thank you, Kelly, for the warning. And thanks to everybody for all the encouragement. Because it ain't easy. But it's getting easier. I don't feel lost because I don't have something in my hand. And if things get particularly bad, I've got a pencil I can play with over here. And I need to remember to boost some extra straws next time I'm in the sheets or whatever. I'm getting along. Okay. It's okay. And discovering the wide world of nicotine pouches. We'll get there. So that's pretty much catching up with everything. Trying to think if there's anything I'm forgetting. Steve in New York with a note. America with three K's. I'm beginning to become more precise about the term America. Every person living in North and South America and all points in between is an American. That's absolutely true. Given that we are, as a country, circling the drain, I'd rather not pull our American brothers and sisters into our demise. I propose we start calling ourselves something more specific to us. Examples: Statesians or Statesians, USians, or the ever-popular, going all the way back to Miss Teen USA of many years ago, U.S. Americans? And the Iraq? That's got a real ring to it. U.S. Americans. Yeah. Well, the lead story has nothing to do with prayer meeting Wednesday or prayers or meetings or religious or even a little dog named Sparkles. Nope. No, it has to do with the word coming out of the grand jury in Louisville, Kentucky today. There will be no justice for Breonna Taylor. None. Zero. Zip. Zilch. Nada. Niente. Oh, sure, the grand jury did charge someone. They charged one of the three cops who murdered Breonna Taylor. But not for, you know, killing Breonna Taylor. And maggot Kentucky Stan Attorney General Daniel Cameron, for whom there are terms which I, as a white guy, am precluded from using. Well, he declared that the officers did too knock at the door before they blew Breonna Taylor into eternity. Daniel Cameron, who, if it was anyone related to him, would have damn sure made sure there was some sort of justice, said that the three cops were justified in wasting her because her boyfriend fired at them. Now, bear in mind, these three, and I'm going to use the term, and I don't use it generically or generally, but these three pigs were armored up. There is little to any chance that any shot fired by anyone inside that apartment could have done any harm to them. Unless they got caught square in the face, which is long odds indeed. And Judge Annie O'Connell announced charges brought against Detective Brett Hankinson. Three counts of wanton endangerment in the first degree. God, there are so many historic antecedents for this. You remember in Blazing Saddles, when the railroad hand car goes into the quicksand and they lasso the hand car, and it's being operated by a pair of black guys. And they lasso the hand car to save the hand car while leaving the black guys to, you know, drown in the quicksand. It's grimly funny in Blazing Saddles. It's not so damn funny in real life. Because, you see, the grand jury returned three charges of wanton endangerment against Brett Hankinson. By the way, this is the dirtbag who months ago, when we were all in lockdown, took it on the road and took his family on a Florida vacation. That's where his daughter, and they took, and his daughter got to take her gal pal with her. They posted bikini photos with the hashtag Blue Lives Matter. Yeah. But Hankinson was charged with three counts of wanton endangerment because three of his bullets went through the walls and could have harmed people in the apartment next to Breonna Taylor's, a pregnant woman, a man, and a child who were not even injured. Now, this is not to say that that charge is illegitimate. It is legitimate. But holy shit. You want to talk about not being able to see the forest for all the damn trees? This is horrifying. This is disgusting. This is just another case of watching a grand jury be led by the nose to a preconceived conclusion that Daniel Cameron wanted to see in the first place. So Brett Hankinson will stand trial for having his bullets not hurt anybody, but not stand trial for the cold-blooded murder of a young woman asleep in her bed. I am opposed to violence. I am decidedly in favor of nonviolence. But I don't know how now Breonna Taylor is ever to have justice. Daniel Cameron, maggot lickspittle, and Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, a man of color. Wow. Said, according to Kentucky law, the use of force by Mattingly and Cosgrove was justified to protect themselves. This justification bars us from pursuing criminal charges in Ms. Breonna Taylor's death. So, let's be clear. Breonna Taylor never fired a shot. Not one. Not one. But these Louisville pigs practically unloaded their weapons at her. And what then is the state of self-defense in this country? Now, I am not and never have been a proponent of all the various and bilious bullshit that is pumped into our body politic by the National Ruble Association. But the concept of self-defense extends backwards in Anglo-American jurisprudence to times long before white folks had even arrived in this hemisphere. If you are not an aggressor and someone comes after you with, say, their sword, that's how old this is, it's pre-fucking gunpowder, then you have a right to draw your sword and defend your life. And if you believe Daniel Cameron, which I do not, he is a maggot, the truth ain't in him, he is a liar, because that's what the followers of Donald J. Trump do. But he says that the cops knocked and announced themselves. Okay. Let's work with that. Let's view the fact pattern in the light most favorable to these three pigs. And, you know, Daniel Cameron and, you know, the maggots. The cops announced themselves. And then they burst through the damn door. Now, I don't know what it's like in Louisville. And I have never been a person of color. But that does not stop me from asking what I believe to be pertinent questions. Questions like, how am I supposed to know in the middle of the night that it's really the cops? If, for instance, you were a bad guy, maybe in the middle of the night you'd holler you were the cops as a way of trying to keep someone from doing you harm. They may have announced, but then they barreled through the door. And at that point in time, well, you know, maybe a half a millennium worth of Anglo jurisprudence says you have a right to defend yourself. But Daniel Cameron says the pigs had a right to defend themselves against the guy defending himself against the pigs who barreled through his door, which, let's remember, was the wrong fucking apartment. Sorry, yelling, bad. But this seems to get lost in the shuffle. Those three pigs were looking for a guy who was already in custody. They were looking for someone that they didn't even know some of their colleagues had already apprehended. That seems to be evidence of, perhaps, gross negligence. And then the guy they were looking for at an address was not the address where they said, oh, Louisville police, and then barreled through the door and started shooting at a woman who was asleep in her bed. And that grand jury was led by the nose by a prosecutor who did not want to see those three pigs face anything resembling justice. And so we come back to the same question. How in the hell does a young murdered woman, a young murdered black woman, achieve justice under this scenario? Well, I mean, her family got to give some money. Ain't that enough? No, it is not enough. Not enough at all. Not enough by any metric or stretch of the imagination. You know, in Montgomery, when Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat, that led to the Montgomery bus boycott, which also led to broader boycotts of white-owned businesses. Well, that's not going to work in Louisville. So the question becomes, when justice is denied, how then is justice extracted? And I simply do not have an answer. And if my heart is full of anger and anguish and disgust and fury, what then of the hearts nearest to Breonna Taylor? How does one extract justice against these three pigs when they're going to walk? Do you simply follow them around and make sure that and walk behind them with a sign that says murderer? He got away with it. I got nothing. Ron in Raleigh says, if I may, Bob, since you as a white guy are precluded from making a descriptive statement about the Attorney General of Kentucky, allow me. This chicken and biscuit eating handkerchief head Uncle Tom should be ashamed to be a Democrat and a decent black man. He should not be allowed into his mama's house ever again. Is he a Democrat? Because they sure did welcome him with open arms at the Republican Cool Kids Conclave. Ron with another question. No-knock warrant? Why would you announce yourself if it was no-knock warrant? I'm confused. Everybody is, Ron. Everybody is. That's what I thought. Jack in Shreveport says, no, he's a Republican. And as for the lone member of that gang of three, that hit squad, that death squad, well, James in Illinois probably has it right. I predict a conviction, James says. The sentence will be 5 years probation and a stern talking to. Maybe. But given the way this grand jury was manipulated, I'd guess much more toward an acquittal. Because the other two cops, of course, well, they'll testify. We was afraid for our lives. We're little pants-wetting pigs. And we're scared of everything. We were so scared we didn't even realize we was at the wrong apartment. And, of course, the Louisville Cop Union will do everything in its power, as it already has, to try to slime the name and memory of Breonna Taylor. And the black community in Louisville, and the black community in the entire United States of America, and every ally of that community, everyone who holds close to their heart the idea that black lives matter, well, we'll all just go and pound sand, I reckon. It reminds me of something else, too. Because everything eventually runs together in terms of these stories. You reckon those charges would have been brought by the grand jury if the woman in the next apartment hadn't been pregnant? Those are three charges to satisfy the fetus fetishists. Plain and simple. That's all. That's all. But it does remind me of another circumstance. Years ago now. It reminds me of the Upper Big Branch disaster. How, Bob? That was a coal mining disaster. Yes, it was. 29 men were incinerated past the point of being recognizable as ever having been members of the human species at Upper Big Branch. And they were so incinerated because a toxic, vicious attempt at a human being scofflawed safety regulations meant to keep miners from being incinerated in explosions. It took a while, but eventually Don Blankenship was hailed into federal court on charges of fucking over shareholders relative to the value of Massey Energy. And charges of being a scofflaw with regard to safety regulations, which resulted in the incineration of 29 miners. Well, just to review, ripping off shareholders in Merca is a federal felony. Evading safety regulations that result in 29 human beings being incinerated past recognizability as human, that, by God, is a misdemeanor. Really? And so a jury, tried and true, heard the case, and they decided there was not evidence enough to support a conviction, a felony conviction, for ripping off the shareholders. But there was ample evidence, beyond a reasonable doubt, to support the idea that he had evaded and violated safety regulations sufficient to merit a conviction under that statute. And when he was convicted, he was sentenced to a year in Club Fed, which he served at a minimum security facility out in California. This cop Detective Brett Hankinson will probably never see a day behind bars. Benjamin Crump, the lawyer for the Taylor family, said three counts of wanton endangerment in first degree for bullets that went into other apartments, but nothing for the murder of Breonna Taylor. This is outrageous and offensive. Responding to the grand jury's actions, the American Civil Liberties Union said, "This is the manifestation of what the millions of people who have taken to the streets to protest police violence already know. Modern policing and our criminal legal system are rotten to the core." Meanwhile, dancing a little buck and wing, Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron said, "I know that not everyone will be satisfied with the charges reported today. Every person has an idea of what they think justice is." No, you fucking maggot! It's more a matter of everyone has an idea of what they know, not think, but what they know justice isn't. And Daniel Cameron has nothing to do with justice. Cameron went on to say, "Well, they did knock and announce that information was corroborated by another witness. Who? The pregnant lady next door whose apartment got shot into? Really?" Yeah. Of course, grand jury proceedings are secret, so we can't know what kind of skullduggery went on behind those doors. Pretty sure there was some skullduggery, though. You do want to keep being an assistant attorney general, don't you?
Well, yes, sir.
You know what to do. Less with an answer. "I'll say it for you, Bob. That house ginger buck dancing, boot licking, Trump mushroom dick sucking motherfucker, whatever bad happens to him, I will celebrate." Yep. I mean, I don't care if he stubs his toe. Good! Justice for Breonna, you bastard! I don't care if his Amazon package comes damaged. Good! Justice for Breonna, you prick! Fuck him. Fuck him. Now, Breonna Taylor's boyfriend did exchange gunfire with the cops. And he said he did so because he thought they were criminals and that his home was under invasion. Now, by way of letting Hankinson off the hook, they determined, and God knows how, that Hankinson, who shot into the next door apartment, well, none of his bullets hit Breonna Taylor. But the other two, well, it was their bullets, and they were engaged in self-defense. While Hankinson goes, "What? Who? Where?" and shooting in through the walls. Mm-hmm. If you believe that, I got a bridge in Brooklyn you might want to buy. And so, the city of Louisville has declared a state of emergency, and they've closed downtown, much of it, to traffic. Business owners downtown, some of them are boarding up their shops. And by God, the police chief of Louisville, Robert Schroeder, said they will not tolerate any violence or destruction of property. Because property, by Jesus, is more important than the life of Breonna Taylor murdered in her sleep. Robert Schroeder said, we are prepared to meet any challenge we may face. Demonstrators should protest peacefully and lawfully, or else we'll murder you, too. I added that last part. God damn, it's sickening. And every story about her is accompanied by that photograph of her standing in front of the U.S. and Kentucky flag and in front of the seal of the city of Louisville, wearing her EMT uniform and holding a bouquet of roses from Kroger's. Smiling and happy. A reminder, at the time she was murdered by these three pigs, she had been working long hours. Trying to protect people. And help people. As COVID-19 swept through her town and state. And three rogue cops blew her away before she could even get fully awake. And she, absolutely, undeniably unarmed. What kind of rotten shots were those three pigs that somehow they just managed to kill the black woman with no gun instead of the guy who was shooting at them? Jeremy in Vermont says the right wing's been busy this month trying to smear her name, claiming her name was on the warrant because of a past boyfriend who was a claimed drug dealer. So, of course, by association, she needed to die. Justice, my ass. You're absolutely right, Jeremy. As to Don Blankenship, James in Illinois says, do you recall any of the details of his violating regulations? I do. The inspector ordered that a barrier be constructed to direct the flow of air. The work had already been done. Blankenship was so incensed that the work had been performed without his consent that he had the barrier ripped out. That's what killed those miners. The only thing that needs to be done had better have to do with running coal. That's what he said, Blankenship. The safety-related work and Blankenship's determination was non-productive. He didn't just allow the men to be killed by negligence. He killed them by his own order. He should be in prison for life. 29 life sentences consecutively served. I agree. But remember, it's only a felony if you fuck with the money, James. Incinerating 29 working people, how could that possibly ever be a federal felony? Yeah. Work like you mean it. That was one of the signs that he would put up at his mines. If you ain't running coal, you ain't working. We don't make any money on safety stuff. Said that too. Damn, my head hurts. My soul hurts. These fucking monsters. And of course, it was just a day or so ago that one of the three pigs, and I very seldom use that term, but I'm using it here. Oh, hell yes, I am. Because, you know, if the shoe fits, right? But one of the three pigs sent out an email, and he's the one who one of the ones who walked, pissing and moaning about how misunderstood and how abused and how discriminated against they are. Jesus. And that was just in the last day or so. Trying to find the precise language here. Oh, where'd it go? There it is. Louisville Metro Police Sergeant John Mattingly, who was given a walk for wasting Breonna Taylor in her sleep. He sent an email in advance of the announcement of the grand jury findings. Mattingly wrote to other cops in the Louisville department and said, "You do not deserve," because he used all caps, "you do not deserve to be in this position. The position that allows thugs to get in your face and yell, curse, and degrade you, throw bricks, bottles, and urine on you, and expect you to do nothing. It goes against everything we were taught in the academy." Yeah, do nothing. Do nothing, Mattingly. Do nothing. As compared to what? A young black woman sound asleep in her bed that you fucking wasted? And then he went after the mayor and the chief of public safety and the chief of police even. He said they hadn't supported him enough. And the two other pigs, Miles Cosgrove and Brett Hankinson. "The position that if you make a mistake during one of the most stressful times in your career, the department and FBI, who aren't cops and would piss their pants if they had to hold the line, go after you for civil rights violations. Your civil rights mean nothing, but the criminal has total autonomy. You're so fucking scared, get out of the business. Go sell cars, you piss ant." The FBI might like to hear that they would piss their pants if they had to hold the line. Hold the line. You know, my aching back. Yeah. Out there holding the line on the mean streets just outside the door of Dunkin' Donuts. "Regardless of the outcome today or Wednesday, I know we did the legal, moral, and ethical thing that night by blowing away a woman in her sleep." Sorry, I added that part. "It's sad how the good guys are demonized and criminals are canonized." Well, look, a religious reference. It is Wednesday, after all. "Put that aside for a while. Keep your focus and do your jobs that you're trained and capable of doing. Don't put up with their shit and go home to those lovely families and relationships. You know, like Breonna Taylor can't. Stay safe and do the right thing. You are loved and supported by most of the community. Now go be the warriors you are." But warriors, really? "But please be safe. None of these peaceful protesters are worth your career or freedom. Godspeed, boys and girls." And that fucker is gonna... He's walked. There's no gonna to it. He's walked. Wonder how black members of the Louisville PD feel about seeing people referred to as thugs. You know, a late 20s black woman sound asleep in her bed, doing absolutely nothing to anyone, but according to this asshole, she's a thug. God damn. Oh, and speaking of police officers, let's go up to Ohio for a minute. Turns out that the son of a local cop in Ohio, Marysville, Ohio, Well, a video went public. It was a video of somebody flipping through a bunch of Democratic Party campaign signs and including "Fuck Biden." And the signs were showed off by the son of one of the cops there on the Marysville Police Department. And the Ohio Union County Democrats tweeted the Marysville PD and said, you know where he lives. When can we pick up our signs? You know, law and order. Dum-dum. Right. No word yet on any outcome. Yeah, I'm sure there won't be any consequences for the young fella. He was just being a high-spirited boy in a political campaign year. Two, four, five, six, seven. Yeah, seven campaign signs that. Son of this member of the thin blue line stole. Yeah. God. What a country! Right? Oh, I know. Flavio says pigs are innocent, sweet, intelligent animals, and they give us bacon. I suggest the term ghoul is more appropriate for these animals. My soul hurts. What an absolute travesty of justice. Well, ghoul's okay, but you also have to remember that pigs are smart and pigs are innocent, you know, until they're not. Because pigs, left to their own devices, will behave like pigs. That's why, well, you remember... Remember Mr. Wu in Deadwood? Remember what the pigs did when you threw a body to them? Pigs will even eat a sick pig or a wounded pig. Pigs are remorseless that way and vicious and destructive. Yeah. So that's just the first part of the program. There's ever so much more out there to deal with this evening. Among other things, as Sparky let me know, according to a court order, a judge has ordered Eric the Dim, to testify in the New York Attorney General probe of the Trump Organization. And according to that order, he must testify in response to a subpoena from New York Attorney General Letitia James. And it has to happen before the election. That order came down today. Now, the pettifoggers retained by Eric the Dim said, well, I'm willing to be deposed, but only after November 3rd. Nope. And what Letitia James's office is looking at, and she's a real attorney general, as opposed to, say, Daniel Cameron down in the Commonwealth of Kentucky stand, her office is looking into the propensity of the Trump Organization to bullshit the values of their real estate possessions on annual financial statements that they would then use to obtain loans. In other words, they were practicing fraud upon the financial institutions from whom they were hoping to cadge some money. And Judge Arthur Engoron ruled after a hearing in Manhattan Supreme Court. Judge Engoron said, nope, he has to testify no later than October 7th. Mr. Trump, meaning Dim Sun, the judge said, cites no authority in support of his request, and at any event, neither petitioner nor this court is bound by timelines of the national election. Without even cracking a smirk, the Attorney General's office said, the court's order today makes clear that no one is above the law, not even an organization or an individual with the name Trump. Because, you see, Attorney General Letitia James had to go to such extraordinary lengths as to file a separate action compelling Trump's compliance with the subpoena. Because he had lied to the office about his willingness to testify during the summer. And thinking it's above the law, the Trump Organization is also withholding documentation about those properties that has also been properly subpoenaed. So, I don't know. Steve in New York knows what the appellate procedure is there. Can that subpoena be delayed by virtue of further pettifogging? I don't know. I wonder, says Ron in Raleigh, going back to Breonna Taylor, you think these trigger-happy dickweeds have taken Dave Grossman's killology classes? He runs his seminar for cops 200 days of the year. It teaches cops how to be predators. Well, if they haven't, they probably know someone who has. Been a busy day. Elbert in Rhode Island says, will any of the cops actually be sent to jail? Or will the cop actually be sent to jail? If he does get sent to jail, he'll immediately be put in solitary to prevent any of the other prisoners from killing him. He will never see a single second behind bars, Albert. Barbara says, I swear, Bob, I don't know how those mofos can look at themselves in the mirror. Easy, Barbara. The same way that their great-grandpappies and great-great-grandpappies looked themselves in the mirror for what? 200 years of slavery? It's not like the plantation manors were without mirrors. Decertify that cop union, says Randy in PA. Be a lovely start. Silent R. Lamar says, crying police, please. When I see or hear police officers complaining about discrimination, all I can say is welcome to the black man's world. And I'll add, suffer quietly. Yeah. Oh, and curiously, we had a little, I guess you'd say it was kind of a mini prayer meeting Wednesday last night in my conversation with Steve, because we talked about the disproportionate representation of Roman Catholics on the Supreme Court. Well, lo and behold, it's almost like we anticipated. Are you listening, Hugh? You know, that right-wing commentator who sounds like the noise you make after you've just knocked down a couple of 40s and then decide to eat some hot fudge cake on top of it. Hugh!
Even before Donald Trump announces his SCOTUS nominee, Democrats and blue bubble media have begun to voice their anti-Catholic bias. That anti-Catholic bias is deep and enduring. That dogma lives deeply within the Democrats, and every Catholic in America should know it. And Hewitt was joined by Newt Gingrich, husband of the woman who has to gargle with holy water every time she gets anywhere near Pope Frank. You know, she's the ambassador, the Trumpian maggot ambassador to the Holy See of St. Peter. If President Trump nominates Amy Coney Barrett, Notre Dame law professor, appeals court judge, mother of seven, two adopted from Haiti, clerk for Scalia, devout Catholic, it will pose a unique challenge for Kamala Harris, the most anti-Catholic bigot nominated in over a century. Are Democrats prepared to say a devout Catholic is by definition unfit to serve on the Supreme Court? If no pro-life justice is acceptable, then no faithful Catholic, evangelical, or Orthodox Jew can be considered. Are Democrats really prepared to alienate that many Americans? Oh, shut up, Newton. Go find an intern to sexually abuse. Pervert. Now, see, back in 2017, when Amy Coney Barrett was having her confirmation hearings for a seat on the federal bench that she damned well didn't deserve, she's a maggot appointee, of course. Dianne Feinstein went after her when she stated pretty plainly, Barrett, that she would listen to the tenets of her faith instead of listening or paying attention to or following the actual law of the United States of America. And Dianne Feinstein said, the dogma lives loudly within you. Because, see, Amy Coney Barrett has written a bunch of shit over the years. And she has made plain in those writings that she will follow the church and the church's theocracy instead of being a neutral and unbiased member of the judiciary. But now it's being hammered around. The dogma lives loudly within you. Amy Coney Barrett, make no mistake, has no business on the Supreme Court of the United States. Maybe if Holy Mother Church would come into the second millennium of the current era, she could be a priest. And maybe she'd like that. But she has no business being a judge. She has no business in the seat that she's on now. But no one who comes before her dares to say that to her because it could cost them their law license. Because no matter what kind of weird freak you are that's been put on the bench by Mitch McConnell, every lawyer coming before them has to bow and scrape and abase themselves and pretend that a theocrat has any business anywhere near the Constitution of the United States. And make no mistake, she's a theocrat. The plan, of course, is to replace a largely secular Jew with a hardcore, theocratic, dogmatic, religious maniac. There, I said it. And you know what? Her writings support every word I just said. Among other things, Amy Coney Barrett, as David in South Carolina Stan reminds us, belongs to something called People of Praise. Well, okay, I mean, you know, some people are members of the Kiwanis Club. Some people are members of the Elks or the Moosises. The Knights of Pythias. The Oddfellas. the Eastern Star. Big deal. She's a member of People of Praise. Well, no, it is a big deal. Because to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg with a woman who believes that a woman is subservient to her husband and should obey him in all things, that's dangerous for every woman in America. Because she has made plain, Amy Coney Barrett has, that she will let those positions rule her rulings. But over at the Friendly Atheist, Hemant Mehta has compiled a handy list of those anti-Catholic Democrats. Let's see. Presidential candidate Joe Biden, Roman Catholic. 2016 vice presidential candidate Tim Kaine, Roman Catholic. 2012 and 2008, the vice presidential candidate was Catholic, Biden both times. The Democratic presidential nominee of 2004, John Kerry, Catholic. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, Catholic. Chair of the DNC, Tom Perez, Catholic. Sonia Sotomayor, member of the Supreme Court, Catholic. Members of Obama's cabinet, John Kerry, Tom Perez, Hilda Solis, Julian Castro, Catholic, 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 Catholic. 235 House Democrats were elected in 2018. 87 of them are Catholic. That's more than a third. 60% of the Catholics in Congress are Democrats. And then, of course, there's the only Roman Catholic in the history of the United States to serve as president, John F. Kennedy. And so, here we are. If she is confirmed before the election, one of the first cases, Amy Coney Barrett, if she is nominated, we'll hear, is a case called Fulton versus City of Philadelphia. And in that case, a faith-based foster care agency that receives taxpayer money, which in itself is a great big steamer taken right on the First Amendment. Well, they're pissing and moaning because Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia, says they should not be able to discriminate against LGBTQ families. Or, for that matter, shouldn't be able to discriminate against families that don't, whose beliefs don't line up with those of the faith-based foster care agency. Amy Coney Barrett. And so she once gave the commencement address at Notre Dame. And therein she declared, speaking to the young scholars about to embark upon their lives as Notre Dame grads. You may recall yesterday evening Steve talking about the question of the ends justifying the means. Well, Amy Coney Barrett got there first. And she said that that the purpose of having a career in the law is merely a means to an end. Well, if that's the case, maybe we'd like to know what the end is. And for Amy Coney Barrett, the end, which the means justify, is in her word, that quote, that end is building the kingdom of God. But because the Republicans do nothing nearly so well as pogo sticking up onto the cross, Well, the Republicans are hollering, anti-Catholic bias. Bullshit. Oh, my God, says Barbara. Oh, my God. She has two adopted Haitian children? Can you believe how fucked up those children will be? Oh, I know. I know. Lee in New York, Amy Coney Barrett on the court? Hell, she should be on a tennis court. I'm sorry. Hell, she shouldn't be on a tennis court. I concur. Steve in New York. Amy Coney Island. Okay, fine. Being Catholic is not prima facie reason not to approve her. However, I don't want someone from a group that inspired the Handmaids in The Handmaid's Tale. Teachings of Holy Mother Church. I wonder, would she be against the death penalty? Be in favor of people's right to unionize? Against war? That would be no, no, and no. And speaking of Margaret Atwood of The Handmaid's Tale, Flavio reminds us, in regard to that weird-ass group that Coney Barrett belongs to, Margaret Atwood says that the groups like this served as primary inspiration for The Handmaid's Tale, and it's not hard to see why. In numerous interviews, Atwood alluded to the group but did not call them out by name. In an interview for the New York Times Book Review in 1986, she said, "There's a sect now, a Catholic charismatic spin-off sect, which calls the women handmaids." Members of People of Praise are assigned accountability advisors. For men, they are called a head. For women, a handmaid. That is, until the popularity of the book and subsequent television series grew and the group changed the title to Woman Leader. Well, it certainly doesn't have a ring to it. And it's also clear how deeply Barrett is involved in People of Praise. According to the New York Times, and make no mistake, People of Praise is a fucking cult. According to the New York Times, both Barrett and her husband's fathers served as leaders in the group. Barrett has also appeared in issues of the group's magazine, Vine and Branches. One appearance was an announcement that she and her husband adopted a child. Another was a photograph of Barrett attending a People of Praise women's gathering. But these once documented links have disappeared since she was nominated to be on the circuit court. Of course they have. Right down the memory hole. Steve adding, when have evangelicals ever looked at Catholic bias as a bad thing? I can remember a time when Republicans, well, that was sort of the... modus operandi.
John Kennedy's gonna become president and he'll take all his orders from the Pope at Rome.
Yeah.
Billable Rick says, Amy Coney Barrett, Bob, from how you've described Barrett in her view of the purpose for having a career in the law is that she's a dominionist. She's a very scary woman who doesn't belong within 20,000 miles of any court bench.
No, she doesn't. And I just can't help wondering if we're going to overrepresent Roman Catholics on the court. You know, 20% of the people in the United States, maybe a higher number than that, 20% are people of no faith whatsoever, non-theists, non-believers, agnostics, atheists. But can we have even one member of the Supreme Court? Oh, fuck no!
Because you know that would give Jesus a sad.
Silent R. Lamar says, "As for me, I'm a lifelong member of the Don't Shoot Black People group."
Pretty sure Amy Coney Barrett's not a member of that group, Silent R.
Randy in PA says, "You know, I gave up having invisible friends when I was age 5. But I recognize that this is a really hard life and some people need their brain crutches to stay sane. If they didn't insist upon pushing their beliefs on me, I probably wouldn't want to remove their crutches. And that is the eternal problem with theists and theocrats. Very seldom do you run across one who doesn't feel an abiding urge to make you believe like they believe. This would be a moment where the old DJ would cue up some Jefferson Starship. If only you'd believe like I believe, baby, we'd get by. That's all. That's all. Just fall in line. And ladies, just do whatever some man tells you to do. If he says that you can't have a job out in the world, then, well, kick those shoes off and put on an apron and get into the kitchen. And then when he gets home, bring him his pipe and his slippers and maybe a martini. And, well, if he decides to slap you around a little bit, then understand that that's what Jesus needs for you in your life. That's Amy Coney Barrett. Billable Rick. If Barrett agrees with the People of Praise's position that women must be submissive to men, then why in the hell is she a judge? Seems to me that she should have her husband sit on the Supreme Court arguments for her, since he would decide cases in which they couldn't agree on the results of the cases. Well, hell, why did she ever even try to become a professor of law at Notre Dame? Why couldn't she just ask her husband what the young law students should be taught? Well, to recall one of the fundamental tenets of Orwell's Animal Farm, all pigs are equal. We're back to the pigs again. All pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than other pigs. This is that. But it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And enter Dr. Doctor, couldn't put on a Band-Aid without killing somebody, Robert Jeffress, the whited sepulcher member of a generation of vipers who runs the First Baptist Church of Dallas. And he's all cited about Ruth Bader Ginsburg passing away and creating a vacancy on the court. Now, I said in the last couple of programs that if Justice Ginsburg couldn't make it to January 21st, 2021, 1-21-21, 1-2-1-2-1, that's kind of neat. If she couldn't make it that far, then this is as good a time as any. That there, it certainly would have been worse had she passed away in the summer. This makes real trouble for Mitch McConnell, whether he admits it or not. But Pastor Dr. Jeffress says the Ginsburg court vacancy could not have come at a more opportune time for President Trump. Suddenly COVID and Woodward are nothing but background noise, he said, saying the quiet part out loud. Oops. Because we have now reached 202,000 dead Americans. Oh, and September 10th, and this gives you an idea what the turnaround time is, because this is the 23rd. On September 10th, a man attended Donald Trump's super spreader event in Freeland, Michigan. And now he becomes the first person identified as having the Trump virus. Rest assured, there will be more. But Nitwit Nero, COVID Caligula, Viral Vespasian, has awarded himself an A-plus for his handling of the death toll. Yeah, really.
So, we're rounding the corner. With or without a vaccine, they hate it when I say that, but that's the way it is. We're rounding the corner on the pandemic, and we've done a phenomenal job, not just a good job, a phenomenal job, other than public relations, but that's because I have fake news. I can't, you know, you can't convince them of anything. They're fake. But we have done, on public relations, I give myself a D.
Man, he's stopped up, isn't he? He's either had a fresh rail of Adderall or he's in need of one.
I give myself an A+.
You can't convince them of anything. They're a fake. But we have done, on public relations, I give myself a D. On the job itself, we take an A+ with the ventilators and now with the vaccines that are years ahead of schedule.
Of course, the vaccines aren't years ahead of schedule. And no mention in there of 202,000 dead Americans and climbing. He's a mass murderer. He is a madman. He is a killer on the loose. Oh, dear God. Sparky letting me know that today's shit show has started. We won't stay long, I promise. But let's just check in on the madness. Oh, God.
It's going to be a very interesting time, but we have a flu season coming up. We've had some flu seasons which are really massive over the years, over many years, and we have some that are much less so, but it's still significant, so I hope they can separate them because it's pretty close. In the past 4 months, we've created 10.6 million jobs. We cut unemployment rate nearly in half. The unemployment rate is cut nearly in half. Larry Kudlow is here. He'll be discussing that in a little while. Retail sales
wonder if he's
are up
sober.
121%. That's far above what we thought. Manufacturing is up 61%. That's above our schedule, and our schedule is a heavy schedule. Automobile production is up sixfold. Home builders' sentiment is at the highest level in history. That's an amazing statement, Larry.
Yeah, home builder sentiment. Fucking sentimental home builders. Jesus Christ. This won't be any fun until he starts evading questions. So, yeah, we'll maybe check in later. One of the more enjoyable moments that I ran across had to do with Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and him trying to explain how immunity works to none other than Dr. Anthony Fauci, who you will find out is fresh out of fucks to give when it comes to Rand Paul and that thing on his head. Oh, Rand Paul's neighbor, where are you when we need you?
It brings us to an important question. Is man really capable of altering the course of an infectious disease through crowd control? The statistics argue a resounding no. The evidence argues that mitigation efforts have failed to flatten the curve, that most countries, regardless of public health policy, suffered a significant spike in deaths and then a gradual decline. Now, some will argue, what about Hong Kong, Taiwan, South Korea, Japan?
Others will argue, what about polio? What about the flu pandemics of the latter half of the 20th century in the 1960s, 68, 69, where crowd control and virus control was actually effective in making sure more people didn't get polio or the flu But Rand Paul is too monumentally goddamn stupid to take that into account. But what he's about to do here is out himself as the racist eugenicist son of his racist eugenicist daddy. Listen carefully.
Most countries, regardless of public health policy, suffered a significant spike in deaths and then a gradual decline. Now, some will argue, what about Hong Kong, Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, each which have had extraordinarily low death rates? Hong Kong, Taiwan, and South Korea certainly enforce stricter quarantine and contact tracing rules than the U.S., but Japan's rules were largely voluntary since their prime minister lacks the legal powers to enforce a lockdown. One explanation for the low death rate.
One explanation for the low death rate is, oh, I don't know, the miraculous healing powers of Aqua Buddha. No, something else.
In much of Asia, is that the population may have a higher degree of exposure to coronavirus colds, and therefore have more pre-existing cross-reactive immunity.
This is, of course, pure bullshit. The coronavirus is not limited to Asia. The coronavirus gets all over the world. And you never catch the same coronavirus twice, epidemiologists will tell you. But that doesn't matter to Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. He is, after all, self-certified by his own ophthalmological certifying company, instead of being certified by the, say, American College of Ophthalmology. No. Didn't want to bother with that. Didn't want to study for the boards. So he just created his own board of ophthalmology and said, oh yeah, I'm great.
If scientists were interested, there is a fascinating field of inquiry looking at susceptibility to COVID-19 and assessment of whether people not have pre-existing immunity to similar coronaviruses. In fact, pre-existing cross-reactive immunity to coronavirus may explain why we have so many people that have very little symptoms or asymptomatic. While there's still many things we need to learn about this pandemic.
Or people having minimal cases of coronavirus may be explained by ill humors or good humors or the good humor man or green bile or black bile or demons or homunculi or succubi or incubi or isn't that fun?
It's important
science.
That we the people not simply acquiesce to authoritarian mandates on our behavior without first making the nanny state prove their hypothesis.
You know, that's a drinking game you can play with Rand Paul. How long will Rand Paul speak before he utters the word nanny state? And the idea that this libertarian ophthalmologist would complain about authoritarianism when in fact he is a member of the single most authoritarian party ever to wield power in the entire history of the United States. Yeah, well, I can't help but think that he's in the hands of the goddess of irony. And, well, she's got more in store. She gave him the coronavirus and he still didn't fucking learn. So you got to think that maybe she's got a trick or two more up her sleeve. Might be careful, Randy, Randy Paul there, if new neighbors move in next door to you. You never know. All right.
As for now, what we do know is that New York and New Jersey and Connecticut and Rhode Island still allow the highest death rates in the world. We also know that Sweden.
He was getting ready to go on to Sweden. Well, he did all that. And then Dr. Fauci. Well, it didn't take long for Dr. Fauci to deconstruct that monumental pile of horseshit.
Fan of Cuomo and the shutdown in New York. You've lauded New York for their policy. New York had the highest death rate in the world. How could we possibly be jumping up and down and saying, oh, Governor Cuomo did a great job? He had the worst death rate in the world.
No, you misconstrued that, Senator, and you've done that repetitively in the past. They got hit very badly. They've made some mistakes. Right now, if you look at what's going on right now, the things that are going on in New York to get there test positivity 1% or less is because they are looking at the guidelines that we have put together from the task force of the four or five things of masks, social distancing, outdoors more than indoors, avoiding crowds, and washing hands.
Or they've developed enough community immunity that they're no longer having the pandemic because they have enough immunity in New York City to actually stop.
I challenge that. Senator, please, sir, I would like to be able to do this because this happens with Senator Rand all the time. You were not listening to what the director of the CDC said, that in New York it's about 22%. If you believe 22% is herd immunity, I believe you're alone in that.
Ooh, that's going to leave a mark. If you believe that 22% is herd immunity, I'm pretty sure you're alone. That's very true. Todd in South Carolina pointing out, going back to Judge Amy Coney Barrett, that statement by Judge Amy Coney Barrett about building the kingdom of God sounds a lot like judicial activism to me. Well, Todd, that's only because it is. Mm-hmm. So New York has knocked its positivity rate down to 1%. And under 1%, actually, for over a month. And yet they're still not allowing indoor dining in the city. That will wait for another 7 days till the 30th of September. Well, to every state that is suffering with rising cases. The state of Talibandiana says, hold my beer. The state of Talibandiana has just declared that it will fully reopen in a stage 5 return to the pre-COVID status quo. Restaurants, bars, nightclubs, viral cesspit churches, can all reopen in full-on wallering and lollygagging and LARPing and smollicking and grabulating and spewing and spraying. All at full capacity. You want to have a convention? You can have it in Talibandiana now. You want to have high school football? You can have it in Talibandiana now. High school basketball? You can have it in Talibandiana now. You can have fairs and festivals. Yeah. Even though Indiana's positivity rate is at 3.9%. Hoo, Jesus! It's about to be a lot higher than that, sunshine! But this is not a state government. This is a cult. You want to know how fucked up what Indiana's doing is? Here's how fucked up it is. Florida has a 5% positivity rate. Florida, run by white supremacist adjacent illegitimate governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, who only became governor through the efforts of real live, no kidding, Nazi robocalls. They're still at 50%. But the bioterrorist maggots who run Talibandiana, well, they're gonna get the virus going real good in the Hoosier state. Yeah. Who's your pa getting buried by? Who's your ma getting buried by? Who's your sister getting buried by? Hoosiers. Dave? Dave? Out in Talibandiana? Hide. Don't go outside. The killers are afoot. Dave with a note, the charismatic, on the case and on the cross. The charismatic movement in the Catholic Church since the 1970s has been the answer to the holy rollers of Protestantism. You know, your Assemblies of God and your snake-handling, strychnine-swilling, batshit crazy assholes. They make my life and pretend work difficult. I can't keep up with all the hammer swinging going on around the shop, and I've never been told by many of my Catholic relatives that they fear the Democrats because... Or I have been told by many of my Catholic relatives that they fear the Democrats because they'll kill Catholics. Never mind that the church's social teaching, the church's social teachings line up pretty good with progressive and, yes, even liberal American politics. Signed, your buddy Dave in the blind. Like I said, Dave, save yourself. And via Steve in New York, a preemptive for Rand Paul. Oh, fuck you! He needs one of those every time he opens his mouth. It's all great, says Lee in New York, except for the part that isn't. The only reason that the climb is so impressive is the fall was so far. The economy fell like Wile E. Coyote hanging in the air after running off a cliff. Mother! Wow, Wile E. climbed out of that hole. Trump saw the economy climb out of a hole, but it's not as high as that cliff. Precisely. And that's an analogic cowbell for Lee in New York. Well, thanks, Sparky. Nitwit Nero's left the room, and the quack doctor, who's a stroke doctor and not an epidemiologist, is talking now. How about that?
As late as January, it could be after the election, that there's no clear-cut time, and that's what I want to make sure that you're saying.
This is the current thinking that I have been told. I'm not in charge of the vaccine development. I'm relaying information. And what I've been told is exactly what I said, and there will be 100 million-plus doses available by the end of this year. It is highly likely we will have a vaccine before the end of the year, and it is also likely that we will say the data is good, we have the vaccine, and then it will be submitted, of course, for approval and authorization sometime in October, but it depends on the data. No one can really say with certainty when it's coming. That's just impossible. I don't see the data until the data happens.
Dr. Redfield today said that more than 90% of the population remains susceptible to coronavirus. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I think that Dr. Redfield misstated something there.
And so you misstated last time and today.
I'm going to answer your question if you let me finish. The data on susceptible that he was talking about was his surveillance data that showed that roughly 9% of the country has antibodies. But when you look at the CDC data state by state, much of that data is old. Some of it goes back to March or April before many of these states had the cases. That's point number one. Point number two is that the immunity to the infection is not solely determined by the percent of people who have antibodies. If you look at the research, and there's been about 24 papers at least on the immunity from T cells, that's a different type of immunity than antibodies. And without being boring, the reality is that according to the papers from Sweden, Singapore, and elsewhere, there is cross immunity, highly likely, from other infections. And there is also T cell immunity. And the combination of those makes the antibodies a small fraction of the people that have immunity. So the answer is no, it is not 90% of people that are susceptible to the infection.
So I guess my question is, for I'm not a doctor, I defer to your expertise on this and to his, but so Americans hear one thing from the CDC director and another thing from you. Who are we to believe?
You're supposed to believe the science, and I'm telling you the science.
So he's not telling us science.
I'm telling you the science, and that's the answer. And if you want to look up all the data, you're free to. You can also talk to the following epidemiologist.
I guess, why is he still going out before Congress and speaking if you say he's misstated today and the president said he misstated last time? Americans are looking for the best information right now.
Yeah, and I'm giving you the best information.
No.
It's confirmed by people like Martin Kulldorff, who's a Harvard epidemiologist at Harvard Medical School. Let me finish, please. Jay Bhattacharya and Johnny Anides, both epidemiologists at Stanford. Professor Gupta, University of Oxford. These are people who know the latest data on the immunology and what's happening, and I just recited it to you.
I'm just going to give Scott a little time off. I want to reinforce some of the things that President Trump said about the economy, because that's
this is Larry Kudlow.
A key part of the story. We got
now. Let's take a quick let's get a handle on how this is going to play out. So he, Dr. Atlas there, who looks like a 90-pound weakling, by the way, Dr. Atlas just said, well, he name-checked a bunch of academics and epidemiologists and the like. What's going to happen now is in the next 24 hours, some or all of those people that Dr. Atlas just name-checked will say, oh, fuck, no, I didn't say anything of the sort. Because that's how it always happens with these maggots. And we've now reached the Barack Obama was a terrible president portion of the program, talking about number of people in poverty and median household income growth. For instance, median household income growth being over $6,000 between 2016 and 2019, and we curiously leave out the entire pandemic year. Lying swine. Oh, and back to Talibandiana, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Ralps tells us Indiana, according to COVIDAC now, in the southwest corner of Indiana, is red, red, red. Well, sure it is. And Flavio says, you mean Wisconsin's 17.3% will be second? Yeah, probably. Wisconsin, 32.9 per 100,000 daily new cases. Infection rate, 1.25%. Positive test rate, 17.3%. ICU headroom use, 16%. Tracers hired, 6%. Right. You guys will probably be surpassed in short order by Talibandiana. Lee in New York says, it's not 9% who got infected, so Trump has stopped most people from getting the virus by most people getting the virus, doing the suffering so you don't have to. Ciphering, not suffering. Well, a little of both, really. Oh, what a joyful experience it is, I'm sure, to be a maggot and to be secure in the loving arms of Trump. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just a gross image. That probably took out the late part of dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone and maybe the early starters in the Mountain Daylight Time Zone. Gee! Which doctor will I trust, asks Steve in New York, an epidemiologist or a radiologist? The same guy who said this on July 15th. It is proven that children have no significant risk. But, of course, none of the members of the Johnny-on-the-spot, white-cosseted, pampered panjandrums of the White House press corps can be bothered to remember that July the 15th moment. Oh, hell no. Mm-mm. Yesterday, Eileen tells us, Eileen in New York, yesterday, as he was boarding his plane, a very brave reporter asked him why he hasn't said anything about the 200,000 dead. Trump had no response and looked around and said, anybody else have a question? Freak me out. That has to grow into an ad. Well, and what was neat about that, Eileen, is that when he ignored the woman who asked him the question about why, if he had anything to say about the 200,000 people he's killed, and he just ignored her.
Anybody else? Anybody got any other questions?
A male voice spoke up and asked the same question, and he answered that one. God, he's so transparent. And, you know, not in a good way. And by the way, we started out the program talking about Louisville. Agnes sent this tweet along to me. While the police chief in Louisville is calling for protesters to protest peacefully and lawfully and not be upset that a young black woman was murdered in a hail of bullets in her bed, well, as of 2:13 p.m. this afternoon, a so-called militia group, a gang of armed right-wing, white-wing thugs is another way to describe them, were marching up 7th Street in downtown Louisville and would not identify themselves. And these domestic terrorists were in no wise challenged in the least by law enforcement in that city. And they are out there with one reason and one reason only: to commit murder if they get a half a chance. Yeah. And, of course, today, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, or at least her mortal remains, made her final return to the Supreme Court of the United States. Jesus. Hey, thank you, Jeremy. That's mighty kind of you. Jeremy just kicked in this evening. Much appreciated. Thank you. So let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's me, Reggie, from the Cato Joe's. Happy hump day to you.
What's happening, Reggie?
Long time no hear from
you. Yeah, it's been a while. You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine, man. I'm just fine. But I wish these people, like, I wish these TV shows, like, if you would learn their lessons about interviewing Republicans, like, as such as recently, when they started back last week, they interviewed a Sarah Bristleback scumbag. You know what I'm talking about, right? You know, Sarah Bristleback scumbag. You know, Sarah Huckabee Sandbag, a scumbag.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
And they won't learn their lesson. Then they interviewed some black chick this past week who's a Trump supporter. They abruptly have to get rid of her, you know, cut her off and get rid of her, you know. Didn't the Jeanine Carroll fiasco teach him anything? Apparently not. Because they keep right on doing it.
Well, you have to have you have to have somebody who's willing and able to learn for them to be taught, Reggie, and I don't think those preconditions have been met.
Why do you say that, Bob?
Well, I mean, I think it's self-evident.
Oh, I mean, you don't see shows like The Real or The Talk doing that, but they wouldn't put up with it. At least they have the control over what they, over the, you know, have to say over who to bring and who not to bring on. So, but of course, if you having Meghan McCain over there, is no shock and surprise. They haven't learned their lesson about that either. You know, biscuit or free.
Remember, Reggie, and it sounds as though you watch these things quite religiously. These are entertainments, okay?
Right.
These are not high-minded policy discussions. They don't even have the gravity in many instances that we have here on this program.
Right.
They are vehicles for the sale of advertisements and the delivery of viewers to the tender mercies of their advertisers.
Or the network, which runs them.
Well, the network makes its money from the advertising, so there you go.
Right. Oh, yeah, Sonny Holston, you know, broke silence on her book. I Am the True. They try to get her to, shall we say, selectively worded, you know, try to get rid of the truth, that she wouldn't do that. They want her to take certain things out of the book, but she wouldn't do it. She refused to do it. And for that, I say, go, Sonny. Go, Sonny, go. I'm glad she didn't do it. I'm glad she spoke up and out about it. Because I guess it was time for her to get it off her chest, out of her mind once and for all, if you know exactly what I mean by it. About what happened to her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm glad she did. I'm sure you are, too. I'm glad she did it. I'm glad she did it. So, I just hope that nobody goes trick-or-treating this year. I've heard they canceled that because of the COVID-19. Is that true, Bob? Or have you heard anything about that, Bob?
Say again, please. You're a little bit muffled.
Well, I've heard that they've canceled Halloween this year because of COVID-19.
Who are they? Halloween is not a national holiday, and it's not even a state or community holiday. It is an informal holiday. But yes, I mean, I know around here, because of COVID-19, there's not going to be any trick or treating.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That seems wise. But hey, it looks like there will be trick-or-treating in Talibandiana, Reggie, because they're returning to normal, just like I mentioned a few minutes ago.
Yeah. What are these people, stupid?
Yes. They're maggots. They're Republicans. And I think stupid is is something we can extrapolate from that. Yes.
Yeah. And they're learning impaired. They're too busy listening to Donald Trump and Fox News, Fox News TV Radio 1, as you would call it. You know, and those idiots on Fox News thought that Ruth Bader Ginsburg's passing will stop people from still covering COVID-19. But of course it didn't, and it won't. You know what I mean? What idiots those people are. Just because they're sick and tired of hearing about it doesn't mean the entire world is. You know what I mean? Or saying, Bob?
Well, yeah. What we're looking at now is an attempt, Reggie, to pretend that the coronavirus, COVID-19, isn't here anymore.
Didn't happen.
If you go all the way back to the Republican National Convention, the Cool Kids Clavern.
Yeah.
They didn't mention the disease in the present tense during the entirety of that gathering. This is an attempt now to just make it go away by ignoring it. States like Florida have been dummying up the numbers. Here in West Virginia, remember what I said? If 30 people in a nursing home get COVID-19 here in West Virginia, we now count that as one case.
Oh man! Oh man!
That was the report from a month or so ago. Today, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice announced. We have 11 cases in our prison at Mount Olive, and seven cases among the prison population, and 11 support staff members' cases. Well, I don't even know what that means now. If that's if they've got seven cases in the prison population, does that mean there's really 700 or 70?
You don't know, Bob.
Because they count a group of cases as one case. If there are 11, if there are 11 guards and security personnel who have it, does that mean there's actually 110 or 600? I don't know. I don't know,
Bob. I thought we had. I don't know either. I thought we had two mathematical scientists that would know something like that. And since we're not,
I mean, the reason this Lulu Scott Atlas is giving the coronavirus updates now is because they can't let Dr. Fauci. They can't even let Dr. Birx do it now.
Why not?
So they've got a guy who sounds like they got a guy who sounds like he ought to be advertising in the back of a fucking comic book.
Or running a comic book store.
you're probably a little too young to remember Charles Atlas.
Yeah, I was, man. I was born in the early 70s, Bob.
Yeah, Charles Atlas. Well, you're almost old enough. Charles Atlas, there were ads in the backs of comic books for the Charles Atlas weight training program. No longer must you be a 90-pound weakling.
Yeah, I still have those. I still have those old school comic books with him in the back. Of course, I ignore him because I'm reading what the comic book content is, you know.
Yeah, but if you've got some that are that old, the ads are going to be more fun than the actual copy. I mean, if you've got comic books that old, there are Sea Monkey ads, and I live for those.
Right, right. But I thought this guy was a fraud, Charles Atlas. That is, wasn't he a fraud? I think.
Well, I mean, he was just selling a weightlifting program.
Right.
And you know, it was just hey, get some exercise. Not fraud per se.
Yeah. But
you know, his goal was to make sure that no more 90-pound weaklings got sand kicked in their faces at the beach.
Right. What do you think? We had to think about all that, Bob, way back in the day. About guys like him. Although I think he sounded like more like a nerd than a bodybuilder.
It's not relevant. I probably shouldn't have brought it up, but the quack who's now doing the science talk for the White House is named Atlas, Scott Atlas. And frankly, like I said, he doesn't resemble Charles Atlas. He resembles the 90-pound weakling.
Right. Yeah,
there we go. Mighty Mouse remembers. Like Mighty Mouse remembers. Just emailed, don't let them kick sand in your face. Right.
Right, right. I mean, this guy sounds a bit more like a nerd, but... You know, and you know all these briefings that they have. To me, they seem to be going nowhere unless they're being asked real questions.
Yeah,
but which they can't get out because they'll have it twisted and they'll have it spun. You know, the media will spin it, especially one in particular, which I just stated earlier.
Well, as Randy says of Dr. Atlas, he's a quack doctor, and we're all sitting ducks. That's pretty. That's a good one, Randy. Hey, Reggie, you take care of yourself. Are you staying safe? Are you staying home?
Yeah.
Good. Make sure you do because you know Georgia's no place you want to be right now. But enjoy these early days of autumn. It's probably still warm down that way. Might be a few sunny days left.
But once it gets cold, how are you guys going to grin and bear it?
Oh, well, you know, we'll just be burning kerosene for all we're worth. I love the smell of kerosene in the morning.
I hope you got all the kerosene you can get.
Well, we got 3 5-gallon jugs, and I fill them up every chance I get.
I hope you do, Bob.
All right, you take care. You take care, Reggie. You hear?
Yeah, you do too, Bob. And don't let them get you down, man.
Oh, I won't.
And don't.
You be good now.
And don't. And I, me too. And I hope that he wins by November. Joe Biden, that is. Not.
Oh, me too. Me too, Reggie. Me too. Get out there, get vote early if you can. I've already voted. So has Agnes.
Right.
You take care of yourself now. You hear?
Don't let them stop the mail-in voting. Please don't let them stop that.
Oh, I hand carried mine to the clerk's office. There ain't no mail. There's no mail service involved. We'll talk to you later, Reggie. Bye okay. Now. Our buddy Reggie calling from Decatur, Georgia. And hey, look, it's Flavio who remembers sea monkeys.
I almost sent in for them.
Oh, they got to the point where they sold them in the stores when I was a kid, Flavio. And I would stand there looking at them with 200 proof longing in my eyes. And look at my mother. We would have walked up to the shopping center. My dad would have the car. I'd be at work. And we'd just walk up to the shopping center and say, oh, mother, please. I got to see this. I got to see this. And, you know, my mom, bless her heart, would say, son, it's not what you think it is. I said, but you see the queen and the king and the... Son, those are drawings.
What were they exactly?
Brine shrimp.
Brine shrimp. Like krill or something or...
It's, or smaller, yeah.
Damn. Like common as dirt.
Oh, sure.
The terrarium... Remember the terrarium? That was more honest, I think.
Yeah. But
they,
it was what got you, whether it was in the back of a comic book or you know, you got full color
Marvel
there.
Or DC.
You got full color there in the display in the little in
and
the,
they were so
in
much
the dime store
too, weren't they?
Well, the queen was pregnant. Remember?
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of yeah. Lacking,
holy Jesus, they still sell them. They still sell them, Flavio.
I remember the cartoons. The cartoons, I mean, the drawings in the back were kind of pornographic, you know.
And now, they've spun something off called Aqua Dragons.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if you use your favorite browser and just type in sea monkeys and then you click images, there are nice, pictures of what a brine shrimp looks like.
Yeah.
But, let's see, $19.99, the original sea monkeys magic castle kit, everything you need to hatch sea monkeys. $34.95. Sea Monkeys Ocean Zoo.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that was in the 60s, I think. You know, those
up into the 70s. Up into the 70s, I remember them well.
Those ads were no longer, I mean, you know, those ads were no longer active. I mean, by the time I was buying comic books and you know, they were just in the back. I mean, you knew not to order them because it was like, you know, this stuff was like had been republished.
Enter the wonderful world of amazing live sea monkeys. Own a bowl full of happiness. Instant pets.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember those. I'm just calling briefly, just to chime in. I'm just really depressed because, I mean, well, not as depressed as Breonna Taylor's family is, I'm sure. But everybody thinks, oh, you know, well, she got to pay off, you know, $12 million.
And can't spend a penny of it, being how she's all dead and everything.
Yeah. No, I just think the whole thing is sick. And this country's sick, and well, I'm not gloating. I mean, Brazil is in a similar way because we made so much progress, but we have a rotten Congress that's dominated by evil jellicles and
no, let's say a rotten Senate.
No, this is the includes both in upper and lower chamber of Congress. I mean, when I think of, you know, emprise, what's the French word emprise in English? The grip. Emprise.
Yes.
The grip that the fucking religious have on the legislature is just mind-boggling. It really is. I mean, you know, and when you think of it, Brazil is a country that was a country of the future. I mean, look at its motto. It's a positivist motto. Order and progress. That's straight out of Auguste Comte, the father of sociology, positivism. You know, betterment. They're always, you know, striving towards. And then you got these religious freaks. I mean, just like the United States. I mean, we had scientists and, you know, serious people like that, you know, as our heroes, scientists. And all of a sudden we have, oh my God, the evangelicals.
Well, it's by design, Flavio, but let me interject, if I may, please. You say you're feeling depressed, and I if you're saying it, I imagine you're not the only one saying it. So let me simply say, try not to be. And I know that's overly simplistic, but they, you know who they are, right? They want us depressed. They want us beaten down before the struggle even begins. This is, I don't know. Will Lord of the Rings analogies work with you?
Yeah.
Okay, this is Helm's Deep. Beaten before you even begin. But if you decide that you aren't, and that the fight is worth it, and that you're not going to give up, and you're not going to surrender, and you're going to make them fight for every goddamned inch of ground, then maybe you're not beaten after all.
I think that you're right there. But I call to commiserate. This is where we need to somehow retrench and strategize. And I need to see more of that on our side. I need to see more of that. I mean, but I always make those comparisons because the United States and Brazil are equivalent countries, I'd like to say. I know you may quibble with that.
Yeah, I'm not in a quibbling mood this evening, Flavio.
Consider that both countries were born of slavery.
Sure.
They are both continental powers. They both have huge militaries. There's a lot comparable. There's a military-industrial complex in Brazil. I remember reading back in the 80s.
An overabundance of religious insanity. Let's add that.
An overabundance of religious insanity. I remember back in the 80s reading in a glossy magazine, now defunct, Brazil was selling arms. It was a manchete, headlines. It was this magazine. It was glossy. It was like the Sun of England. It was a tabloid kind of thing, magazine, tabloid, whatever. But it was owned by a famous bigwig, but it had some hard-hitting news in there in parts and places. And one of the things was they were detailing the amount of arms that Brazil was selling to Iran and Iraq during that 10-year war.
Right, they were middlemanning both sides.
Yeah, it was like,
well,
was
one, like, hey, one of the biggest selling bargain firearms in the country today in terms of handguns in the United States.
Taurus.
Damn straight.
Yeah, and so Brazil was selling light armored vehicles, all kinds of guns, weaponry, whatever. Because, see, we have a huge armaments industry. To both sides. I mean, that's like J.P. Morgan in World War One. You know. They were like financing both sides of the war. They couldn't lose.
It's a good dollar.
Yeah, it was like, wow, you know, nice gig if you can have it, you know. And so I was like reading, and it had these glossy pictures of these light armored vehicles and guns, and just like, wow, you know. And that was a right wing publication. You were supposed to be proud of this.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. You were like looking at Jane's or something, and it was like, oh, we Brits have the best, we're selling the best all over the world, you know, and yeah, we're supposed to be proud of this. And of course I wasn't, but I was like looking at this going, oh, we're profiting out of, we're burning the candle at both ends, you know. And okay, so Brazil and the United States, they're both born of slavery, both have religious freaks, huge armaments industry, and we're both in a pickle right now because we have fascism in power in both countries. I'd like to see both countries deliver themselves out of fascism because, you know, they're nice people there too, you know? They're not all assholes.
No, not at all.
And, I mean, I still have relatives down there. Half my family is divided. Half is with Bolsonaro and half is not.
Jeez.
In fact, my 85-year-old aunt separated from my uncle because my uncle is a fascist, and she's 85.
Well, I'm kind of proud of her.
Yeah, my Aunt Teresa. So I just called her in July of this year to wish her a happy 85th. And she's still lucid. Just wonderful. Even half of my cousins are fascists and the other half aren't. And I'm not even up to date. I haven't talked to them for a while, but I just was able to talk to my aunt this July. And I just want to say, you know, there are going to be some tough times ahead. Brazil and the United States are vying for first and second place in the COVID lottery. And you know, I'm reading about, you know, the same thing. You know, the governors of the states say one thing, the presidents say another, and the people do what they want. In other words, you know, some follow the mask wearing, others not. You know, it's like total bedlam. And But we got to stick together, I think. Those of us who are on the right side of this and the sane side, and we mustn't despair, that's true. And we got to find ways to motivate ourselves, because it's really difficult lately. I mean, the example comes from the top, and there haven't been that many great examples from the top lately, you know?
No. We have a paucity of heroes, I'm afraid. But they're there. It's just that every time one comes up, there's always going to be an article or a blog post or a tweet or something on Facebook about the insufficiency of their ideological purity.
Right.
You are a Renaissance man, Flavio. So it comes as, it will come to no and I know you know this. It will come to no surprise, as no surprise to you, when you take a moment and you ponder the actual meaning of hero. We get it from the Greeks. And if you do just a cursory survey of the people that the ancient Greeks, considered to be heroes, you find out that
flawed.
Pardon?
They're pretty flawed.
They're deeply flawed. They're terrifyingly flawed. And so when someone rises up and does something heroic and then gets immediately torn down as being insufficiently ideologically pure,
we really should be cheering for them.
Well, I mean,
in spite of their imperfections.
Well, they're going bad. By definition, a hero is going to be imperfect. And that's kind of why, well, but I'm funny this way, Flavio. You know this. You've been listening for a long time. I despise hearing, say, pick any horrific accident.
Right.
Like the several years ago, the little boy in Kentucky who got his cricket 22 rifle and blew away his baby sister, because it was kept loaded.
I remember that. That was horrible.
And it was described as being a tragedy. Well, if you could bring, Bill, the first Bill and Ted movie wise, if you could bring a Socrates, for instance, Socrates, into the modern world and say, look, this four-year-old boy killed his two-year-old sister. What a tragedy.
Is that like a Yosemite?
Oh, no. Socrates so predates that. Wait a minute. Are we about to have I think we're about to have a breakthrough moment here, Flavio. Have you never seen the original Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Socrates
comes from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Because
I've seen so many things. I've seen Harold and Kumar and.
No, this is Bill and Ted, and George Carlin's in it, and it's a classic. But they travel back in time and kidnap Socrates, and while they're back in time, one of them, Bill or Ted, looks at Socrates, whom they call Socrates. And he's pontificating, and one of them says, dude, all we are is dust in the wind. And picks up some dust and says, dust, wind. And Socrates says, Eureka! But if you could bring one of those ancients into the modern world and say, here's this four-year-old kid who killed his two-year-old baby sister. What a tragedy. That ancient Greek would probably slap you until the spit flew.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be Socrates.
No, nah, maybe it'd be Euripides. Or Sophocles.
No, it'd be Aristotle.
Or Euripides, I tear your head. Euripides, I punch your face.
It was Aristotle because Aristotle was the one that wrote the Poetics. Right.
Right. Yes, I understand. Let's not get too deep into the metaphor. But the idea, being that, and everybody back then, because remember they went to, there was an Olympics of drama. And so they all went and they understood what tragedy meant. And the one thing you've got to have for a tragedy is a character flaw that leads the protagonist into the tragedy itself.
There were other requirements, and you know, you had to have the rising action.
Right. But it's that
it's that fatal flaw.
That's what I'm talking about. And the same thing goes with heroes.
Remember the peripety? You had to have the peripety, the complication, and then the denouement.
Right.
And then,
even Shakespeare understood the concept of the fatal flaw, because in that Scottish play, it's on bold display, as it is in Hamlet as well. Hamlet's indecisiveness, among other things.
Yeah.
But yeah, the same applies to the fatal.
You have to have a fatal flaw.
Yeah, it's gonna be your undoing. And the same thing goes with hero.
There's a Greek word for that, hubris, right?
Yes.
That's a Greek word.
Yes, and Mighty Mouse is reminding us, don't forget that other famous Greek hero, Testicles.
Testicles, yes.
Testicles the well-rounded, yes.
Cowbell, definitely. Yeah,
for Mighty Mouse, definitely.
No, that was worth it.
That was pretty clear. I was pretty proud of Testicles the well-rounded myself, but yes.
No. By all means, cowbell for that too.
Thank you. See, this is how we get over our despair, Flavio.
Yeah, you're right.
From time to time, I go and I watch that wonderful, you know, I'm sure, I know it doesn't because I read the book. It doesn't live up to the book, but nonetheless, the film version of The Name of the Rose. Because it is so handy.
I hated it.
It's so handy right now. Sure, it's Sean Connery. Sure, it's Christian Bale.
He was the only good actor in it.
Oh, now.
Okay, Valentina Vargas. Great bod. Okay, but that...
Really? You didn't like Father Yorgi? The Venerable Yorgi?
The book was awesome. The book was...
Well, sure, and Foucault's Pendulum as well. Movies don't live up to books. We understand that. But the movie is handy for reminding us that there are always going to be among us people who despise laughter. And you know who despises laughter the most? Authoritarians. Fascists
exactly.
Despise laughter.
Well, they despise it. Because you remember one of the questions, the main question, The Name of the Rose, did Jesus laugh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which in turn, Flavio, reminds me of my favorite joke about monks and abbots. The young novice has been set to work copying text.
Add so of milk.
And so the abbot is looking over his shoulder and he sees a misprint. And he says, no, I think you got it wrong. Let's go down into the catacombs and we're going to check the original text. And the novice and the abbot go down into the catacombs. They blow the dust off the original text, open it up to the relevant passage. And the abbot begins to weep and wail. And the novice is just completely... unnerved. I mean, the stoic, staid, stolid Abbott weeping like a child. And he says, Abbott, father, what is it? And I'll never forget, I actually, many, many years ago, I told this joke on air to the great biblical textual critic, Bart Ehrman, and he laughed his ass off. You know how priests are supposed to be, well, you know, not having sex. And the abbot is looking at, the text, and finally he looks up and he wails and says, "My God, it says celebrate."
Oh God.
Oh, and oh yeah, okay. Larry in Liberalville getting in on the action act. Testicles, weren't they a set of hero twins? I'm not up on my Greek warriors. Good one. Good one, Larry. Good
that
one.
That was a great novel. I mean, the English translation was wonderful. I read it first in English, and then I went and I read it in Italian.
Oh, he was a brilliant author. I loved Foucault's Pendulum.
You liked that?
And then I read his last novel.
The Island of the Day Before? The Island of the Day Before?
I think I read that one too, but I don't remember it. But the one I did read was, and I think it was his last novel. It just left me cold.
He was a towering intellect.
He really was. Umberto Eco.
Milanese, bon vivant, he looked the part, you know, he looked like the scholar of the Commedia dell'arte. He was like the embodiment of the incarnation of the scholar of the Commedia dell'arte, but he wasn't a charlatan. He actually... You read some of his stuff, his literary criticism and the command of centuries of learning, and, you know, you could tell this guy was a bookworm, and he actually, you know, spent time in the National Library in Paris reading old manuscripts.
The one that kind of left me cold was the Prague Cemetery. I just looked it up. And there's another one he published in 2015 called Numero Zero that might be a good read. But that reminds me, there's a really good, and it's kind of stream of consciousness, but I read it years ago, and you make me want to go and read it again. It has a fascinating jumping off point, and that is the search for an original copy of... Il Divina Commedia.
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 Yeah, Nick Tosches, Tosches, is the author, and it's called In the Hand of Dante. And I thought it absolutely brilliant.
And that's, who wrote that again?
Nick Tosches, Tosches, Tosches.
Tosches. Okay.
And apparently it got made into a movie, but it didn't go anywhere, because at least I never heard of it. But the book was fantastic.
All of those things, you know, it has to do with marketing, but...
And that's 18 years ago.
I was not happy with... Maybe I should go back and watch the movie again, because I remember when it came out, I wasn't happy with the movie. But, you know, movies are different animals, and You remember the movie with Viggo Mortensen, The Road?
Yeah.
I was profoundly depressed after I saw that movie, but I never read the novel. But I'm told that the novel is really good. So this is an instance where I should go back and read the novel and then compare the movie. But did you like The Road? Or
No, not so much.
No.
Just
but
didn't
I'm
do
told
it for
that
me.
The novel was much better than the movie. It was depressing. Anyway, but you know, some art is depressing.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of depressing right now.
No, I don't need any of that. I mean, I already drink, so that's not here nor there.
Well, and see, that's I'm in a tough place right now, and today was a rough day. Didn't get to go out and get
11. Day 11? Am I?
Yeah.
Day 11?
Something like that, yeah. 10, maybe?
No, 11. I think there's 11, you said.
Well, I quit last Monday morning. Monday morning before last.
You see, I wasn't in on it because I thought you had quit all along.
No.
So here I am.
I was trying. I tried and failed and tried and failed. And this is the longest I've made it in decades. And I am highly motivated to succeed.
Look, if anything, I made a compromise. I have a couple of cigarettes every night, but maybe because I can do it. But I have no more. But I used to be a pack-a-day smoker, and it took a toll on me. And I shouldn't be smoking at all. And maybe I'll...
Well, for anyone, you know, I'm getting a lot of wonderful encouragement from the community. But everybody who has quit says, understand, you're doing the hardest thing you've ever done.
It's the hardest thing you've ever done. Remember that Jerry Garcia found that it was easier to quit heroin than quit smoking? And he did both. He quit heroin and he quit smoking. And he thought quitting smoking was the hardest.
Wow.
And that's Jerry Garcia.
Yeah.
And, but...
Well, you know, and it makes sense because you don't do heroin nearly to the degree that you smoke. And so you're getting more, you know,
No, everything is associational.
Right, and that's why I've been...
You have a drink, you have a smoke. You have a cup of coffee, you have a smoke.
You watch a Humphrey Bogart movie, you have a smoke.
You have a smoke. Everything is linked to smoking because, it's just the endorphins and those receptors, the nicotinic receptors in the brain. I didn't know I had nicotinic receptors. You mean I was pre-programmed?
Yeah, that's a little that's a little creepy, isn't it? And by the way, Brother Deacon Asa jumped in on your a while back on your observations relative to the similarities between Brazil and Merca. And Brother Deacon said Brazil, Merca, and Iran have insanely similar streaks. We all have an abundance of dirt stupid people.
Just incredible. I mean, you know.
But the thing is...
Just think of it. Hold on.
Yeah, okay.
Let me get back to what I was getting at.
Yeah.
The reward is you will be able to taste food again. And that is the most beautiful thing about quitting smoking. I quit smoking for a whole year after my mother died. And I remember how great food tasted after I had been quit for a year. I went back to smoking after I started hanging around a fellow guitarist, and like Eddie Van Halen, he'd put his cigarette at the end of his guitar, and one day I just gave up, and I said, let me have that. And I grabbed that, and I fell off the wagon. But I remember one of the first things that I could remember about the benefits of quitting was being able to taste food again. Food actually tastes...
I've never had a problem. I've never had a problem tasting food.
No, but it tastes so much better. It tastes so... The reality of the flavor is so much better when you've not touched a cigarette for even a week. Your steak will taste better. Your chicken will taste better. And chicken is the tofu of meats.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. Tastes like chicken.
And that's what I learned when I had quit for only a month. I could smell things again. I could smell things I didn't want to smell.
Understood.
And that's the thing that you should strive for. Keeping a journal. I think that's always a good. I like journal keeping anyway. I keep dream journals.
Oh, those are good.
I keep those since college. Even if they're just vignettes, you know. It's great therapy, if anything. Free. It's free.
Yeah. Well, that's why I refer to my dreams as mind movies.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, you're doing great. And just keep a tally of the of the beautiful things that you're able to do now, and the beautiful sense that you're able to smell now, not only your taste, but your smell will come back, that you are able to achieve now. Your olfactory sense and your gustatory sense comes back in spades, almost with a vengeance, I must say. With a vengeance, because you will put on weight.
I'm trying not to. That scares me to death.
But that's not bad. It's not bad. But it's because you'll realize, wow.
Oh no, I'm already grazing pretty significantly. But
you'll realize, what I've been missing on as far as, you know, it's like when you get a new stereo system. And
the music just sounds better?
And the music just sounds better because you've got more equalizer bands, and you're like, oh, shit, I didn't know this was on this track. Oh, fuck, there's a cymbal. I didn't know the cymbal was even in there. I couldn't even hear the cymbal before.
Yeah.
You know, the hi-hat. Oh, my God, there's a hi-hat. You know, you just start picking out stuff. You know, I'm just going from auditory. That's what you're going to find with the gustatory sense. you're going to be like, oh my God, I can taste this. This tastes like, oh yeah, this is rosemary in spades. Or, you know, this is thyme. Or, you know, this is, oh my God, I never knew that dill could be this sweet. Dill.
Oh, I'm a dill fiend anyway. Let's see, a couple of things here. A note coming in from Todd a little bit ago. I remember the sea monkeys just like Flavio in association with terrariums. Woolworths sold the sea monkeys in very enticing packaging, and the display was very near the terrariums. The premium terrarium was beautiful. They were on a mod white pedestal base with a large clear globe on top, but the packaging on the sea monkeys was criminal, in that a young child did not stand a chance against that kind of marketing. It's true. It's absolutely true. And just a couple more to share along the way. It was a little while back that our buddy Ron in the waiting to be refrozen north, hearing me talk about Breonna, the slaughter of Breonna Taylor and the injustice that followed. Ron said, I hate hearing you rant in such a politically correct fashion. Please keep in mind you can really let go with your rants, and everyone will understand because you're going through the effort of walking away from the cancer sticks. Let it go, son! And a smiley face, ducking down here in the waiting for the first surprise snowfall Canada. And as to Rand Paul and his data, you know, his eugenics argument, follow the data. 40% of Americans will probably decide to wait until the vaccine is proven effective or doesn't kill people in blue states because they don't trust either the CDC, the FDA, or the White House. Well, I'm sorry. I guess I'm kind of one of them. I got my flu shot yesterday, Flavio. I usually don't get it this early, but I got it because I'm, you know. Hold on just a second. The thing about any vaccine coming out anytime in the near future is, as I have previously said, while I'm not an anti-vaxxer by any stretch of the imagination.
Neither am I.
I'm thoroughly convinced that the maggots being the maggots and this gang of criminals and grifters and footpads and cut purses and highwaymen and lowlifes and bootlicks and lick spittles, there's somewhere a warehouse full of old Trump branded vodka, and they're just going to put it in vaccine vials and pass it off as a fucking vaccine. So no, I don't want any Trump brand vaccine, thank you very kindly.
Yeah, no, me neither, and I feel the same way. But now I forgot what I was going to say.
But along the lines of that, the New York Times is just now reporting that, in fact, and it's no surprise, Nitwit Nero, COVID Caligula, undercut government scientists on new FDA guidelines for approving a coronavirus vaccine, suggesting, I love the way the New York Times soft pedals things, suggesting the plan might be political. You think?
I can't fucking stand them. You know, I was the one that got in trouble with NPR. It probably got banned from their comments because I didn't buy into Alicia Shepard's, defense of NPR's, enhanced interrogation techniques instead of calling it torture, and NPR basically soft-pedaling U.S. government torture, you know, it's torture, call it torture, you know. But no, we were talking, did you mention this at all? I think you talked about it yesterday, about the forced hysterectomies.
We've talked about that some.
Okay, yeah, and you know that because of Buck versus Bell, the Swedes, I think only the Swedes, I'm not sure, but I think it was only the Swedes. And it dovetails with Anders Tegnell's light touch with the restriction of the coronavirus, you know, the herd immunity shit. Did you know that they were performing hysterectomies and sterilizations on so-called feeble-minded or less than perfect people in Sweden until the 70s?
No, that I did not know, but it doesn't surprise me.
Until 1973. And lately they've been compensating the people that were sterilized in Sweden.
God almighty.
Because, you know, Buck versus Bell. A decision in 1927 because of the U.S. Supreme Court. By the way, do you really think that the Supreme Court should have that much power or the legislature? Come on.
It's sort of an it's a Gordian knot, Flavio.
Because I don't think those people should have that much power. Honestly, that sounds somewhat
but in order to figure out, in order to understand why they have that much power, you have to go back to John Marshall, and you have to go back to why he did what he did. This all stems from Marbury versus Madison. And Marbury versus Madison, on its face, was a fairly simple case. It had to do with the midnight appointments. John Adams doing a bunch of skullduggery at the last minute on the way out the door, being replaced, trying to get Federalist office holders in place before Jefferson could fill the vacancies. And Marbury was one of them. And Marbury sued. And the only reason the Supreme Court gets it was not the Supreme Court then was not the Supreme Court of today. And there weren't, you know, all these layers of lower courts. You know, now in the federal system, we have federal magistrates, then you've got the federal district court that's a trial court, then you've got the circuit courts of appeals, and then you've got the Supreme Court. And you don't necessarily go up automatically, but according to the Constitution, one of the things, and it's still true, one of the things that the Supreme Court still has original jurisdiction in, which means they can be the first court to hear it, is what are called extraordinary writs. And those come from what in the English common law practice is called, or in the English practice is called equity, courts of equity. And I know I'm going way deep into the weeds, but bear with me because this is hopefully this will make sense by the time I'm done. At first, the church made all the judicial decisions, and the King of England said, "Wait a minute, I don't like that. I'm the fucking king." And so
it's good to be king.
It's good to be the king. Pull. So the church or the Court of King's Bench arises, and that is the king dispensing justice. There's a wonderful line in Henry II, or in the Lion in Winter, where Henry II says to Eleanor of Aquitaine, "While the French boy grew, I've had no France to fight, and in that time I've learned how good it is to write a law or make a tax more fair or sit in judgment of which peasant gets a cow." And literally, that is the period of time when the king as the dispenser of justice comes into its full flower or fuller flower. Because that's also the same Henry II who had it out with Thomas a Becket, who was a fucking prick.
He's a prick. He definitely was. I don't know why he's...
Why he's a saint, right?
He's made a martyr. I don't know, honestly.
But anyway,
and I'm Catholic.
Yeah. So that's the Court of King's Bench, but that proves not to be fully effective. And you know, Becket, for one, was Henry II's Chancellor of England, and the Chancellor exercised all the power of the king in the absence thereof. Mm-hmm. And so eventually in England, there develops the Chancery Court, which is completely separate and apart from the Court of King's Bench. And the Chancery Court is in the business of writ writing. Do you remember the original True Grit, John Wayne? Rooster Cogburn is drunk in his little room at the back of the Chinese grocery, and he sees a rat, and his cat won't even go after the rat. So drunk Rooster Cogburn pulls out and you know he's a U.S. Marshal. He pulls out his pistol, he cocks it, and he says, "Mr. Rat, this here's a rat writ, writ for a rat, and this is lawful service of the same." Bang! And shoots the rat with a bullet that was probably bigger than the rat was. Well, those writs, those extraordinary writs are things like a writ of prohibition, a writ of mandamus, injunctive relief. That's not exhaustive, but
right.
They were you could go and get a writ even after the Court of King's Bench had ruled, because equity, and it was referred to as the equity court. You go to law school and you learn all these equitable maxims. Equity will not permit a wrong without a remedy. Equity will not bet to an inside straight. Equity, the race is not always to the fast nor the, but that's the way, yeah, to the swift nor the, yeah, but that's the way equity bets. So equity is it's an organic process, and it's courts as they evolve together form the basis for what we know as the English common law. And so by the time the framers sit down to put together the Constitution, that tradition is well ensconced. And they are still entirely two separate schools of practice. And the framers gave original jurisdiction for extraordinary writs, which is equity. They gave it to the Supreme Court. So you didn't have to try it in some court below. You could try it directly to the Supreme Court. And so Marbury gets one of these midnight appointments, and he wants to compel Jefferson to let him have his damn job. John Marshall is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. The second, actually. John Jay was the first. But John Marshall is also the cousin of Thomas Jefferson. And John Marshall hates Thomas Jefferson. And Thomas Jefferson hates Cousin John. Because each was everything the other was not. Jefferson was quiet and shy, and, you know, maybe we'd look at him now and say that maybe he was on the spectrum. He was known for shuffling around the new White House, slave-built, in a bathrobe and slippers. And it was said that he had a high and reedy voice. Whereas John Marshall was a member of as close to what early America had in terms of patrician society as you could get, and he was well-educated, well-spoken, he was a bon vivant, he was a Renaissance man, he was handsome, he was gregarious, outgoing, and he saw what was going on with the constitutional system. He knew that Jefferson was an enemy of the Constitution, and Marshall was himself a Federalist. Okay? So he sees the moment there and seizes the moment there. He lets Jefferson win the case. He refuses, if I recall correctly, he refuses to grant the extraordinary writ of mandamus to Marbury.
Mandamus is Latin for "we order."
Yeah. Or you know, give by the hand. And that would seem to be the end of it, but it wasn't. Because John Marshall took the opportunity and said, "By the way, while we're at it here, This is, after all, the Supreme Court of the United States, and we are, according to the Constitution, the highest court in the land. And it will be the province of the Supreme Court in all matters, great and small, to be the final word on what is and is not constitutional. And the executive department, the executive branch, and the legislative branch can fuck right the fuckity fuck off where that's concerned. This is our province. And from that day to this, that is how you get to those nine Supreme Court justices giving the final say-so of what is and is not constitutional. And if he hadn't done that, the Supreme Court would have basically been just another court of marginal relevance and limited jurisdiction. So that's the answer to the question you put forward, even though it took me the better part of a half an hour to get to it. You got a note, Flavio, from Shorty in L.A. Shorty says, Flavio sounds like a younger Noam Chomsky. Well, to me.
Oh, hell no.
Well, hold on.
No, please.
Shorty says, never give up, Flavio. Never give in. Giving in? Well, that's permanent. I know you're getting everything off your chest. This is the best part about the Horn and Bob Kincaid. Conversation radio is the best thing ever. We're all suffering from post-traumatic Trump shittiness. So a while back, Shorty notes, I had asked my doctor, when will the medication stop the PTSD? And her answer was, the medications are just to help with the PTSD. Meanwhile, I gained over 70 pounds. I was borderline diabetic. It took me about 2 years to be weaned from the medication, and I went back down to my regular size. So, you've got, you know, there's sympathy and camaraderie and collegiality always out there in the Horn Family Community Congregation.
Yeah,
and Tom,
so you know, I'm not entirely in agreement with everything Chomsky says, just so you know.
Right, I understand. Tom writes in from sunny San Rafael and says, Flavio, should the court have that much power? Really, I think the executive branch shouldn't have so much power. It's time for a severe pruning of that branch. And of course, that's the dynamic tension that's existed over the years. You know, Jefferson howled to the uncaring skies about the power of the presidency, but the minute he got the presidency's power, he decided he kind of dug it. There's nothing in the Constitution that says the president can buy land without Congress's by your leave, but hello, Louisiana Purchase. And, you know, who can pass up 3 cents an acre for a continent?
Exactly. I just think that what was I going to say? One of my favorite actors, 48 Hours, what was his name? The blonde guy who's an Alki, what's his name? He was in North Dallas 40 with Nick Nolte. Okay, Nick Nolte was cast as Jefferson. I think that was wrong. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did, and it was not meant to be anything historic. But most of what Flavio, most of what we say and think about Jefferson is wrong, because we have elevated a rapist to the Godhead.
Yeah, no, it was like, it was unfair to Nick Nolte, I think, to cast him in that role, and I think he should have refused. And maybe he would have been better off if he hadn't crowned his career with that, what do you call that, turkey? Lemon? What do you call it?
Flop?
Flop?
Dog?
We call it a dog. We call that a pineapple. A
And the pineapple actually comes from Brazil.
It started there?
Believe it or not.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then Dole, you know, bought the rights.
It has fantastic healing properties, pineapple does.
Yeah. And hopefully the...
And rum has never met a better friend than pineapple.
No, and hopefully Roger Ailes and Henry Kissinger will all be getting the reverse pineapple in the Trinity.
Yep. down in the barbecue the eternal barbecue joint.
In the eternal barbecue.
Spend a little time getting basted on the spit, and then come here, it's pineapple time.
Pineapple.
That is the only redeeming value, talking about turkeys and dogs, that is the only redeeming value of that god-awful Adam Sandler movie, Little Nicky. I can't stand it. The Little Nicky voice is like nails on a chalkboard to me. Just terrible, yeah. Awful. Just pff, 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 pff. Yeah. And,
I just wanted to say Godspeed to you in your quest to kick old Nick Botine from the pedestal, and it's really hard. It really is. I still haven't been able to do it, but at least I can mitigate it because I spend most of my time reading, and.
Oh Jesus! You put a book in my hands, and I could torch a half a pack of cigarettes in a half an hour.
So I'm kind of zen about reading. So when I'm reading, there's no sound in the room, and it's kind of like a soundproof room, and I just immerse myself in the reading, but that's the only way I can pay attention too, because I don't want any distractions. And I just made it a point not to buy more than a pack a week or something, you know. Anything you can do to mitigate the temptation.
Well, you might want to try these pouches, Flavio. They are doing great for me. And there's all kinds of different flavors: spearmint, wintergreen, peppermint, cinnamon.
What kind of pouches are these?
They are just nicotine pouches. It's not tobacco. It's just synthesized flavored nicotine in a little vegetable-based fiber pouch. And you stick
it in your
you
gum?
Put, you put it up in your upper lip, between your lip and your upper gum.
In your gencives?
And you just let it sit there, and you get this wonderful... I mean, any urge goes... Any nicotine-derived urge goes away.
And they sell those, and they're over the counter?
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of brands, unpaid product placement. Zyn, Z-Y-N, Drift, D-R-Y-F-T, On, O-N, Velo, V-E-L-O, and they're all pretty much the same thing. And they come in different strengths.
What are they called again?
Nicotine pouches.
Nicotine pouches.
Yeah, and any convenience store, Walgreens, you know, CVS quit selling tobacco. But
this is good.
They're not terribly expensive. Mango.
No, not
mango.
Mango.
Honey lemon. Coffee. I save my coffee once for in the morning when I have my cup of decaf.
So that's just, yeah.
And they come in different strengths. The 2 milligrams, 3 milligrams, 4 milligrams, 6 milligrams, 8 milligrams, depending on how big of a junkie you are. I'd say you probably wouldn't want anything more than 2 or 3.
Yeah, I don't have more than...
And unlike chewing tobacco, if you happen to swallow some of it, it will not make you barf.
Oh, God, no. I tried chewing tobacco once. That's the worst.
Yeah, nothing ever.
I'm not. I don't know how that didn't make me stop.
The only thing worse than booze causing the dry heaves is a good case of the chewing tobacco yaks.
Ooh.
Rough. Oh, hey, Flavio, I got to get out of here, but it's been a lovely conversation.
I miss you very much.
You and I always go all over the place, and it's always a delightful intellectual conversation, and I thank you very kindly for it. And no, just remember,
same here.
Don't let the despair get you. To use another movie reference, you know, the never-ending story. Don't let the nothing get you. And you know, we'll get through this. We'll get through this. We will, all of us together.
We got it. Love you.
Love you too, brother. Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Our resident Renaissance man and master of the art of word knowing. That's our buddy Flavio up in La Crosse. And a final, on the way out the door, a note from our buddy Matt in San Francisco. The subject line reads, merely 35 years, and there's no merely about it. Matt says, I started my 35 years of being clean and sober with 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day at a time. I remember one of the first sayings that stuck. Don't use, even if your ass falls off. All I have is today. Man, there is so much truth in all of that. Thank you, Matt. Thank you for the encouragement. I appreciate it. Thank all of you for the encouragement. I'm trying to change my life. And hopefully it is for the better, and hopefully it is, hopefully it's a good choice. Like I said, I've never been more motivated than I am right now. And so far, today was kind of a little hump. But exactly what Matt said. All I got's today. And I don't have to quit forever. Just got to quit right this minute. Or right this hour. Or right this day. And you guys have been wonderful. You all have been wonderful in your kind support. Tom in sunny San Rafael notes, illegitimi non carborundum, that. Don't let the bastards grind you down. Or don't let the bastards get you down. Exactly. So that's prayer meeting Wednesday. With a whole bunch of prayer meeting Wednesday left over. I mean, the things we didn't touch upon, my goodness gracious. The fact that if you're between 18 and 39 in the new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now today in the universe forever under God. Well, if you're between 18 and 39 here, there's a 63% chance that you don't know much of anything about the Holocaust, and in particular, how many Jews were murdered by the Nazis. There was a survey taken recently, and it had that question on it, and a number of others. Gideon Taylor, president of the Conference on Jewish Material Claims Against Germany, commissioned the state at the survey, and Gideon Taylor said, the results are both shocking and saddening, and they underscore why we must act now while Holocaust survivors are still with us to voice their stories. We need to understand why we aren't doing better in educating a younger generation about the Holocaust and the lessons of the past. This needs to serve as a wake-up call to us all and as a roadmap of where government officials need to act. And, of course, actual history is anathema to maggots, Republicans. Because remember, they don't even like, they get upset about teaching the history of slavery in this country. The 1619 Project? Yeah. One of those Republican shitbirds in the Senate, Tom Cotton, I think it was, who fancies himself some sort of fucking intellectual, threatened schools that would teach anything from the 1619 Project, lest we learn about the viciousness of our centuries-long participation in the hateful brutality that is, in fact, slavery. And then, of course, there's brother pastor minister Roy Fields. He runs a gospel sharp outfit in Lakeland, Florida, called Run With Fires Ministries. Based on the brains of him, he sounds more like Run With Scissors Ministries. And so he was going to strike a blow for freedom. And that's how you wind up with idiocy like this. Him going to Disney World, of all places, on what he called Burn Your Mask Day. And once he got inside Disney World, he took off his mask and said, I got the asthma. It didn't help, though, because Disney World has made abundantly clear it doesn't matter if you got asthma or infotego or the galloping fantods. If you can't wear a mask, you can't go to Disney World. And so there was Roy, who should be given the new name Karen.
Is that his
kid? The movie that came out of Walt Disney World. It's called A Bug's Life. Remember Hopper? He said, if one guy stands up, one hand stands up.
Yeah. Screaming at the cops, and curiously, they didn't tase him, or pepper spray him, or, God knows, shoot him in his sleep multiple times. But he thinks he's got some sort of a right to go to Disney World and make other people sick. Fuck him. Maybe the goddess of irony will catch up with him, too. And then, just because we all need a little giggle, we need to go out to Oregon, where our buddy Texas T has provided us with a bit of levity. Yes. In this case, Oregon man is in competition with Florida man. Florida man having been the previous brother minister gospel sharp. Yeah. This would be Nicholas J. Ellingford, who went to the supermarket in Lincoln City, Oregon. Now, Nicholas J. Ellingford had been had previously posted memes on Facebook saying, after you've defunded the police, just remember, you Black Lives Matter and Antifa fascists, there won't be no police standing between you and us, because he's a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian maggot. And he knows it's in the Constitution. Well, he was standing in line to check out his groceries there at the grocery store in Lincoln City, Oregon. It was Sunday night. And 29-year-old Nicholas J. Ellingford pulled out his Glock Freedom Protector to show to his buddy, who really loves to see Freedom Protectors. And then when he went to, and of course, he's at the grocery store, and you never know when the Antifa BLMs is going to come after you, so you want to carry your Glock with one in the chamber and ready to go and defend freedom. And so when he showed off his Freedom Protector to his buddy there, well, he went to stuff it back in the waistband of his pants, and yes, we all know this, we all know how the story, he shot his dick off. Oops. And just barely missed the femoral artery. Darn it. He mistakenly pulled the trigger. Oh, I guess, yeah, that was a mistake, all right. And so they airlifted him to Legacy Emmanuel Medical Center in Portland. And cops noted in the meantime that he didn't have a concealed carry permit. And so he'll probably be facing some charges, and we'll find out just what he thinks of those blue lives now. Look at this. I'll tell you what, I'm ready if there's any Black Lives Matter Antifa fascists come along. And here now that I'm here at the grocery store getting me a jug of milk and a loaf of bread. All right, how much is, okay, let me put my, bang! Mm-hmm. Like I said, we had to, I hate to end the program on a downer or anything, so I wanted to make sure that we were on a high note there. Yes. So, that's just, why? Just why? And, thanks, Jeremy in Vermont. Check your PayPal. You're not an amateur Uber driver anymore, Bob. Congrats on 11 days. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very kindly indeed. Oh, and, just a little note, a little bit of breaking news on the way. Out. Protests, Mark tells us, Minneapolis, Washington, D.C., the Bronx, Louisville. Louisville has armed white militia on scene, all wearing armbands that I couldn't make out. So they've been walking the streets of Louisville since 2:30 this afternoon, Mark. And they are not there for any good purpose. Not at all. So thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you most kindly. Via your subscriptions at PayPal, Patreon, a la carte contributions. Thank you. You make this program possible. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you. That's right. That's right. Bucko in the chat room. Totally owning the libs. Bang! Yep. Yeah. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening to Steve from Georgia Stan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Brand new Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, right here on headon.live. Great place to hang out here and hang out in the chat room and put a spark to the tinder and get the Malloy campfire going. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. So as we know, Talibandiana's going to open up and catch fire. Wisconsin's already on fire. They're trying to make sure that they can. This is a concerted bioterrorist effort to attack places like New York, no doubt. It's not safe. Stay home if you can. I didn't go anywhere all day today. Didn't even set foot outside the house. If you have to go out, wear your mask, wash your hands, wear your gloves if you got them. Get them if you can. They really do help. Keep your hand sanitizer on hand and handy. Take it with you. Maintain your social distance. Take Paul from Parts Unknown's advice. Make it 10 feet, not 6. More if you can. And if you come across anybody saying, look here, I'm ready. If the BLM Antifa fascists, bang! Avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later, y'all.